It is time to bring in David Terachuk and the Meaty Beat. David joins us live on a Friday. We rebroadcast it over the weekend, and also I do believe it's on Monday or Tuesday, right after the 12 noon news. I really should look at the schedule that Jill and I made to take a look at it. But it's David Terachuk's time now with the Media Beat. He has his own website, themediabeat.us. Also, he's a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief and posts at the Huffington Post as well. Good morning, David. How are you this morning?
Well, I'm well. How are you? I think I know how you are, because I was listening to your estimable broadcast. It's estimable even when I'm not on it myself. I say that modestly. And I'm so delighted to hear that you're playing some feel-good music every day. A little bit of music goes a long way. And I applaud the principle of putting it out there as a counter to some of the, what I think I heard you call the mishmash out there. Somebody else might call it mishigas.
That's right.
I'm not sure. But yes, anything that helps and keeps us in a, or at least a prompt, you know, pushes us a little bit towards a better mood is a good thing.
It's not.
There's an awful lot of bad mood news. I can't say that word, that phrase. Bad mood news which of course is what we get a lot of now. There's a lot of it out there.
Well, the great thing about playing music from like the 70s, which would be good for me because I'm 66 years old, is that it makes you feel better because you forget that it was probably just as tough back then as it is now, but it still makes you feel better. And you get away from all the give and take. I mean, there's some incredible news stories out there. And yes, the incredible width and breadth of the Congress that is coming into the United States is simply an amazing news story with all the women, all the different ethnicities coming in on the Democratic side. That really is truly an incredible story. But there's so many other stories out there that could be covered that even broke just yesterday, like the big hacking in Germany and other stories. The networks last night, even though I watched a movie last night, before I watched the movie, every single network, cable network anyway, was just hammering down Donald Trump and the Congress. And, you know, you just got to get away from
it. You mean Washington?
It wasn't even Washington.
Washington, the focus of the world,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Certainly the focus of the world's attention if you're in cable news.
But Marshall's point is A, well taken, and B, necessary. But the really mildly alarming thing at this point is if you even have the capacity to think short term, long term, after 20 years of screens, you should be planning what you're going to do when this is no longer the focus of attention. Because you know what? The guy's either got 2 more years or 5 more years. You should be planning ahead for what you're going
getting
to
getting towards six. Yeah, sure.
What journalism is doing.
Yeah, and I mean, all administrations come and go. We know that. But I mean, I think certainly many. And again, you know, the cable news people are the ones on my crosshairs. Anyway, they're the worst proponents of this. But the notion of living in the now has been taken to a ridiculous extreme. It's as if there is nothing happening except the one focus.
And it's going to make.
And of course, we know that's not true. The rest of the world does tick on.
The interesting thing about that is that, you know, you can still cover what's going on in Congress because, yes, of course, you have the shutdown. You can still cover. I'm not saying not to cover that, but I'm saying you can cover it with the other hard news that's out there. And, you know, intersperse it. So in radio, David, when I was young, I had a person come and speak to our station, and he was invited in. He was a media expert back then. And even back then, he said, it doesn't matter whether you're playing music or whether you're a talk radio station or whether you're a news radio station. You have to break it up every once in a while with something that makes people feel good about themselves. You just have to.
Well, it'd be like eating all chocolate. If you don't break up all chocolate... It's like if you eat only chocolate, all chocolate, because, yay, chocolate's good if you like chocolate, whatever. or all potatoes, because yay, potatoes are good, you like potatoes, at some point you're going to realize that you're on a really circumscribed, proscribed diet, and but other things are going to, you know,
I think one of the, you know, what, and whatever your motive is, and I applaud the motive to make people feel good, but on the other hand, I don't think that's the primary the primary job of journalists. I've said it along with you guys many times over, but one of the best phrases I can ever hear from the BBC World Service, which still remains one of the world's best broadcasters, is a priceless phrase, and now other news.
Yeah, and that's
even when you've got a really, really big story.
But David,
you know you need to focus on, but you still know there are other things besides that.
Precisely.
Your story that ran this weekend is a good example. It's news. It is news. It is actually even contemporary current news. But you know what? You watch it, and it does not. It's a break. It's a break from the on-the-spot news.
The point.
I make a point of that. Of course, the story you're referring to is the one I did about the country's most highest-ranking Muslim judge, who's in California, and yes, that was kind of current news, but it was off the main beam, of course, I do find that valuable. I mean. Sidelighting is every bit as it's not as powerful, but it's every bit as useful, I think, as full on blaring 50 kilowatt searchlight.
But it corresponded with what happened in Washington. That's the great thing about it. Once again, it brought out the fullness and richness of American participation of the actual people who live in this country.
Yes, and it's all, but there's something else, and this is frustrating to me. First of all, both of you are making the same point. It's very well taken. Think about an exhibition at a gallery, or think about a Broadway show, or think about it. You know, it's not just relentless. It's not the same speed and the same relentless information all the time. There's some scenery.
You got to leaven it.
Yes. That's right. And
mix it up a bit.
One of the things about design and newspapers is the layout, the way that it, I'm sorry, quote, used to be, you know, instead of just this constant scroll with ads, it used to be laid out in a way that made your mind look at different things and, you know, widen. But what I want to go to, based on your story and based on what Marshall's saying, is, and this was pointed out to me by someone else entirely who I really wouldn't have expected it from, and who is part of the very market that that newspapers, whatever, are trying to reach. And what she said, I will give away her gender, is she said, what's really frustrating about what's happening now is you're making everybody a victim group. And that's striking to me because, again, I know I'm ancient, but the way we were brought up was, hey, you're competent? Come sit over here.
And I guess,
no matter what you are.
I guess what amazes me, there's nobody that's more anti-Donald Trump than me. And Joe will say that. It's to the point of aggravation to some of my friends, but there's nobody that's more anti. But, you know, I just can't sit there and watch hours and hours and hours of focusing in on something that I disagree with so much that it becomes even more bothersome for me.
Yeah,
where it takes away all my interest to want to watch news, and that's a terrible thing because you have to be informed, you have to read, and you have to watch. You really do as much as you can. And take in as much as you can.
Yeah, and I think
the tendency to bunch people into groups that you can probably fairly call victim groups, as your critic was suggesting. I think that's almost it's not the quintessence of the function, but I know that cable news and the click hungry. News websites, or not so much news, but sort of partisan bubble websites that dominate the the web now is to create, is to stir up a sense of outrage. That seems to be you're talking about everything, the risk of everything becoming just monotonal, and the monotone is outrage. That seems to be what everybody is trying to cultivate.
That is
succeeding a lot of the time.
And such
an unrestricted diet, as we know, is extremely unhealthy. If we all go around being outraged all the time, we're in a terrible state.
Yeah, that's a great point. I never thought about that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with self-motivated outrage, but when outrage is given to you on a plate time and time again to keep you outraged, that's the problem.
Absolutely. I mean,
it seems to be
the function of most cable anchors these
days,
to rouse everybody up and get them angry and pissed off and then
sell them drugs.
Drugs which
have side effects. And you know what is really sad about that is it's working as a business model, and it is causing just decided.
Yeah, and the equivalent online with all the clickbait that is used in the same way goes to reaffirm that point. Yeah.
And what it is doing to people's brains and their functionality is just truly alarming. We had this. I'm still reeling from this particular thing. One of our underwriters, you know, their underwriting contract is the equivalent of a ham sandwich to that company. And they wanted some back. No, seriously. It's like it's not going to cause bankruptcy. So
$5 a week, man.
Pretty much, in their lens. That, so a few months back, a full quarter ago, they asked for some backup. Okay, fine, fair enough. It's reasonable. So it was sent along, and it was confirmed. And yet, still nothing. Right? No ham sandwich. So we started pursuing it yesterday, and the first thing that happened was the woman, it was sent on a thread that had the attachments, and the person we contacted answered back, "Oh, well, I never got them." But unfortunately, she had said, "I never got them on something that had them right attached to it." So all we basically had to say is, "Oh, well," scroll down, why don't you?
The dog had my homework. Yeah, there's no dog.
But it's just the constant exposure to screens is causing people to not be able to delineate. It's just like there's no delineation. It's all like watching a running loop. And that's causing problems. And it's affecting people's ability.
Yeah,
in my
problems
view.
Of cognition. Yeah. I think you're right. I mean, at the base, it's a numbing experience to watch this material in any great quantity. You do see the same thing again and again. You certainly hear the same arguments being made again and again with ever increasing sense of vituperation and frenzy. And of course, there will be, brain science research into this. And what its effect is on we actually work in our cortex. And instinct tells me it just can't be good for us.
No, and at that's, the very least. And so on top of the Sabbath that you frequently recommend, going back to just playing music. Everyone knows that music has its benefits, and it's not so much to make people feel good as an antidote. It's to just widen the lens. It's very much way back in the day when people had actual, and some people still do, of course, but actual cameras with actual lenses. You know, you had to have a wide-angle lens. You had to have a telephoto lens, and you had your just plain lens. That's what magazines used to be for. That's what long form used to be for. And now, since everything is pretty much, we're told that this is the only way, screen is the only way that you can sample. because no one's interested in anything else, you're just doing a massive disservice to the information pool. Massive.
Absolutely.
And what needs to be figured out, we're past media literacy at this point, what needs to be figured out is, okay, how can you create a balanced information diet? Because if everything is coming from, when I say one source, I simply mean a screen, it's not balanced.
Yeah, and we have to work a little better on our own behalves, seeking out that variation, which is so important to us, to the health of our mind and the overall health of the nation, I think. And the world, I mean, it's happening everywhere. It's pretty much the same in Europe, I have to say, without the quite the same degree of frenzy. But the idea of there being a bubble and everyone taking their information from pretty much the same source, depending on where they are in the political spectrum, is the hard one to break. And encouraging people to take in a variation in their diet is, I would have thought, the sine qua non at the basis of all of this, or the basis of any real substantial mediation.
You know, I was listening to Morning Edition coming in this morning at the station, and NPR to me should try to emulate. I think they try to emulate. They don't succeed. BBC, but for the first time, literally, I can say, and I can't remember when. They had a guest on, and he was speaking about why he thinks the United States should pull out of Afghanistan. And at first, I didn't agree with what his initial things were. But finally, the host let him speak for about 5.5 minutes. And, you know, by the time he finished speaking...
That's an awful long time on NPR.
But by the time he finished...
To be uninterrupted, I guess.
Yeah. You know, by the time he finished... His points made sense. They made sense. When he got a chance to explain.
The opportunity for cogent argument.
Extraordinary. Yeah, and you have to listen to that. That was the reason that Point Counterpoint, the Saturday Night Live, was successful, and the reason that Dan Aykroyd and Jane Curtin will remain ever involved, ever inscribed in memory for their Saturday Night Live version of it, is because you took a topic, and then you argued the different sides. There's never in the world been only one point of view. Never. And it's asinine, excuse me, to try to get people to think that. It's like,
and I suppose the main point is that it was argued in full rather than simply
in bits.
The rattle of a machine gun from either side.
Well, that's
staccato interruption being the main main tone of the main means by which ideas were supposedly exchanged.
But
yeah.
You see, but then the media took Point Counterpoint, and I remember watching that when I was much younger, and I remember watching the Saturday Night version of it, Jane, you ignorant slut. All that was
Dan,
very
Dan, you misguided
was,
moron.
It was very funny and stuff like that. But the show itself, Point Counterpoint, was a condensed show. Unfortunately, now we have this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we have the Point Counterpoint coming from people we don't really care about.
You know, yeah, and about five seconds were given to each point. Of
at most.
One of the alarming things for me is the short attention span condition that it's breeding in all of us. The last detailed study of the actual length of sound bites on television, conducted during I think it was the 2012 election campaign, showed that the average length of a soundbite on American news broadcasts was 8 seconds. So, if that's the average, some of them, I imagine, would have been 2 or 3 seconds. And that's an appalling symptom to home in on, to think that's the currency of our exchange of ideas now. 8 seconds on average per person for a thought.
You know, I don't mind if I'm watching election coverage and there's a panel of people discussing the different things going on election night. I don't mind that. I don't mind the give and take. I don't mind the tit for tat. I find
that. Well, sure, it's part of human exchange.
But you can't have that on every single damn subject in the world. You can't bring in a panel of six people to talk about everything on a day by day basis. It just doesn't work. And like you say, those six people that come in might be very qualified people to speak, but they
turn out seconds. It's
they're
really
not
useless.
Qualified for 8 to 10 seconds, and then they get into shouting matches.
And it's designed.
Sure, and the screen has got to be extended in either direction. Or at least the framing of the screen is going to be extended in every direction, or either the left side and the right side, obviously, because the size of a panel is now generally deemed to be six people at a minimum. I saw on CNN once a parade of 10 people in some kind of soft U shape. Across my screen, I'm thinking, why did they do this? This is self-evidently insane.
That's a great way. That's a great way to put it.
It's better than misguided moron. which you can say, you can't. You can no longer say the other thing, but you can say
that's
that.
True. Uh-huh.
All right. You know, thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.
Thank you.
Of course, David joins us on a Friday morning, and as I say, we rebroadcast it on the weekend and also
on Monday.
On Monday at about 12:05, right after the BBC News. And you can always find it at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand, click on David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.